This year, 2020, marks the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing and protecting women's constitutional right to vote. Happy anniversary. Women vote in higher numbers than men and have done so in every election since 1964. In 2016, 9.9 million more women voted than men. Women have voted at higher rates than men since 1980. A lot of numbers, a lot of facts. What does it all mean? It means, my dears, that we are a political force to be reckoned with. Are you sick of what's going on in our country? Then let's change it. Let's vote as a block. And okay, I admit, one size does not fit all. But on the issues that matter most to us, we can vote in mass. What matters to you?
This is Gloria Moraga's Political Woman, a show designed to highlight the issues that matter most to all of us.
My first Political Woman episode is with my go-to communications queen, Dr. Barbara O'Connor, Professor Emeritus, California State University, Sacramento.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
How are you in the times of COVID-19?
Well, I alternate between being very, very frustrated with the state of California because of all times we really need kids to be able to access schools and telemedicine for any doctor, any place in the state of California.
Barbara O'Connor chairs the board of the California Emerging Technology Fund. For 12 years, this group has been working to close the digital divide in California. Bottom line, they want Wi-Fi, internet access for all. Internet for all.
And we get lip service on that, but they all want to have it be proprietary network. Like education wants to own their own, healthcare wants to own their own. We've tried that, doesn't work. So, and the cost is prohibitive and there's a lot of pork. So we're fighting that battle. And then when I get frustrated with that, I go outside and plant things and go swimming. So, you know, I'm doing what I've always done, but I'm not leaving the house. So it's called Internet for All. We got an act passed by the legislature last year. I chair the board of the California Emerging Technology Fund, which has been operating for 12 years. And our sole mission is to close the digital divide in California, all of California, rural, suburban, inner city, black, brown, doesn't matter. Those that can pay, pay. Those that can't, we subsidize like we do with universal service and telephony. So we've been working on it for 12 years. We were supposed to end in 10. And we did a broadband mapping project and decided there was still too much to do. So we went ahead for another 3 years. And now with the pandemic, everybody's interested in what we have to say, but they'd rather have the money themselves. And the money doesn't come to us. It goes to the recipient of the service or the school or the healthcare institution or the nursing home. But there's state dollars attached. And the vendors are all trying to be helpful because they realize that it's really important. AT&T, Comcast, you know, all of the normal peeps, the Verizon folks. And they're personally saying, we're not going to cut you off during this time. But they're not interconnected either, nor are the fairgrounds. And we're about to go into fire season. You know, we have the example that happened up north with the fire last time where we burned out the first responder site. So the beauty of Wi-Fi, which you were talking about, is that you can actually take buses up and have Wi-Fi hotspots. And we did that after the fire. Probably have to do it again to help people with schools while we get all of this interconnected. The state owns a ton of dark fiber. Various vendors own dark fiber. We just need to connect them all.
Dark fiber or unlit fiber is an unused optical fiber. It's available, ready to be used to connect us all with fiber optic communications.
Nobody's using it. They're fiber beds that have huge capacity, and could be connected to existing networks, then people would be interconnected. That's what the word interconnected means. But we haven't been able to get anybody to do it, even this governor.
You would think that in this time of distancing, with the need for children to continue their education and parents and patients to get medical advice, that internet for all is a must have. Critically important. And if it's possible, we must get it done. If it's possible.
It's possible. It's totally possible. But, you know, Tony Thurman, who's the superintendent of public instruction, decided that they would really like an education network hooking up all the schools. Well, we've tried to do that. You know, the state budgeted for the last 10 years a thing called CENIC, which is a public interest organization that has fiber beds all over the state of California. Caltrans owns dark fiber, which has not been lit up, all the way down the Central Valley. Everybody doubles the figure and takes a percentage of it. It's a pork barrel event. And, you know, we're tired. I'm tired of it, actually. I'm personally tired of it. I want a California network that serves everyone in the state of California. You either pay for it if you can or not. You're subsidized like universal service.
Wow. So what a great project, Barbara.
Well, it's fun to work on, but I'm getting frustrated.
Well, and why? What's the reason?
Well, mainly because the people who know the technology keep leaving the governor's office. First, it was Daniel Zingali, who had been at the California Endowment and their lobbyist for years and is a former student of mine. Then it was Lenny Mendonca, who headed the Silicon Valley Partnership. They all get it. And, you know, our executive director, president of the fund, Sunny McPeak, gets it. She was head of BT&H. She was a county supervisor. She knows all of this intimately. And the board itself is all industry people. It's Intel and Cisco and Trimble. And so you've got board members who are getting very weary of everybody's hand being out. And the people in the governor's office quit. And so you're educating a new person all the time. And, you know, he's trying. He keeps saying he's trying. And it's interesting because I serve on the board of the California Conservation Corps and have forever since B.T. Collins asked me to. And the interests of the two intersect now because the Corps deals with fires and FirstNet providers and all of the above. And they do need, in Yosemite, when they go back and confront all the wild animals who've taken over the park, they need Wi-Fi access too.
For more information on the California Emerging Technology Fund, go to cetf.org. I will include a link in this episode's description.
You can go there and all the reports are there, all the maps are there. You know, and we've had a lot of money and we keep intervening on the T-Mobile merger. We intervene, we get more money because the CPUC understands what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
But it's tough. It's really tough because it means people saying, okay, my interests are not important. And the people are laying people off. You know, they've got people they have to pay salaries to. I get it. If not now, when?
If not now, when? Indeed. A great segue into the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment. Suffrage.
Another one that's kind of fallen away. We were all going to have a big, big party.
COVID-19 has put a damper on the party plans for now.
Set August 20th is the date, and there's a whole group of people, including people from the mayor's staff. It's all of Northern California. And we were going to have it at the Capitol and congratulate everybody and have a big party.
Even though an unprecedented number of women were running for president in 2019, now there are none.
Now we don't.
And for many reasons, it doesn't look like 2020 is the year a woman is elected president of the United States.
And we're arguing over the women that would be vice president because nobody likes the ones that others pick. So, you know, we're back in the same role we've always been in, which is the handmaiden. And you carry all of the burden of the ticket. It's really, we have people claiming that Biden groped people. We're all saying everybody does. That's not a good thing for a feminist to say.
No, it's not. You know, I hate to say that, but, you know, it looks like we're stuck with Biden.
I've been liking him better than some people because I know him. And, you know, I think he's fine. And he said, he basically is going to turn it over to a woman president. Who?
Vice President Biden has hundreds of options. He just needs to choose a woman who can govern and who can help him win.
Because they will become president. They will be the first woman president.
Well, from your mouth to God's ear.
I hope so. I work where I can. In the last election, I went down to Modesto and the Turlock area and got rid of Jeff Denham and got in Josh Harder. And I have the same plan for myself in October to go to Bakersfield and get rid of Kevin McCarthy, who's a jerk. And so, you know, I think everybody has to define their goals about what they can and cannot do. Many of my friends are writing letters, handwritten letters, and paying for stamps to people that don't habitually vote around the Midwest and the South. And they're doing like 2,000 and 3,000 of these letters. So there's something that everybody can do if they're interested.
I started part of the conversation talking about the woman's right to vote, the 19th Amendment. We quickly segued it into, you know, we've come a long way, baby. Oh, no, we haven't.
Yeah, we really haven't. So.
And now we're to the point where, what can we do or say or how can we do this to impress upon people how important their vote is? Because I still know people, they didn't like either one of the candidates. I don't like
Clinton,
so I'm not voting for her.
Right.
And it's like,
right. Or Elizabeth Warren or any of the ones who ran. Yeah. Amy Klobuchar. I think people have to get real. And, you know, I think now's the time for it to happen. And you look at, we haven't had a woman governor in California. And that's, I would like to see both things happen before I die, and I'm 72.
It's money. Money is such a crazy, horrible ingredient in elections.
Right, and women vote. Women turn out to vote a much higher percentage than men. So maybe the key is to talk to other women.
Right.
Around the country. Who knows? I mean, Anne Revell, who headed the FPPC and was chair of the Federal Elections Commission, is running for the Senate in the Silicon Valley.
Right.
If she gets elected, she understands all of the money issues.
Of course.
And yet the Democrats are not wholeheartedly endorsing her either, because it's both parties that rely on the money. And it is money. It is money. You're right.
Article I just read from a professor in the Washington Post about the Senate race and how the Democratic Party is just misspending the money everywhere, giving money to the wrong places in the wrong.
They did in 2016, too. They did in 2018.
What's wrong with
this? Well, I think it's business as usual. And, you know, one thing the pandemic can teach us is that it's a reset. And I think you have to argue with people and not give them money, not give money to the party, give to candidates directly, which is what I've adopted. And I do. And now I can be partisan. I couldn't when I was on the National Board of AARP. So I've had 2 years, 3 years, almost four now, of going out and doing exactly what I believe in.
Right.
And I couldn't do it when I was an academic. I couldn't do it when I headed the Institute. I couldn't when I founded Capital Public Radio, because you have to represent everybody. I no longer have to do that.
It's great. It's exhilarating.
Yeah, it is. It's freeing.
It is. It's the only.
You're welcome to come down to Bakersfield with me. I'm going to get a place at the Marriott Courtyard for a month. Direct people against Kevin McCarthy and eat barbecued food. So that's, and go to the honky tonks.
I'm all in.
Okay, I figured you would be.
No, Bakersfield is just, I hate to say it, but like just a minor step down from Fresno.
Well, I grew up in West Texas. It's very reminiscent of West Texas.
Yeah.
And they have great barbecue food.
Very conservative.
Yeah, it is. Although they don't like, I mean, you know, people ask me, and I was quoted recently on Tom McClintock. Why don't I just drive up there? Tom McClintock represents the new Orange County, and everybody up there adores him. You're not going to beat him. So you pick a place where you think you can really do some damage. And I think Bakersfield is one of them, because they're not being represented by Kevin McCarthy. So that's what I plan to tell people. Do it for a whole month.
County, you want to go to Bakersfield?
Yeah, I'll send a note out to everybody. You want to go to Bakersfield? I'm going to get a courtyard room with a couch.
We can't
come join me.
So.
Yeah, and a swimming pool.
As Barbara focuses on California congressional candidates, I'm watching the U.S. Senate races, especially the Kentucky race. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Republican who is President Trump's rubber stamp, is up for re-election. McConnell has held that seat for a million years. He's now on the campaign trail and calling himself the Grim Reaper. He promises to kill every Democratic proposal in 2021. Okay, it wasn't a million years. In fact, McConnell was elected to the Senate in 1984, and he's been re-elected 5 times. He excels at fundraising. Amy McGarth, a retired fighter pilot, is challenging Senator McConnell in the fundraising department. But an article I read in the Washington Post about this race said there is only one problem with McGarth. She is probably going to lose. But right now, she is giving him some trouble in the polls.
He's beginning to suffer, by the way. The polls down there show that he's taken it in the shorts. They'll just pour more money into it.
You know, she's right? Quite the thing.
Right. We've got candidates all over like her. But we did in 2016, too.
Yeah, we did.
So the key variable is the pandemic. I think if you can harness that and tell people it would be a shame if we wasted this on the feminist issues, maybe people will listen. I hope they do anyway. I'm planning on making the message for them. So
I'm here with you every step of the way. So whenever you need a...
Yeah. And I'm talking to candidates here. You know, I help people who I agree with now for the camera and critique them and come up with rhetorical visions. And the list is long of the people I've worked with.
Right.
And they're all good people and they're all elected. So the question is, can you harness them? And I think you can. I think you can.
To the listeners, you actually work with candidates and have for a long time.
Yeah, I have.
Giving them media training.
Right.
How to present themselves on camera, how to be a little bit better when they speak.
Right.
What else? What else do you do?
And how to develop messages that are coherent with a campaign slogan or what we used to call rhetorical vision. And not go too fast and to make direct eye contact and be persuasive. It's basically Aristotle and Plato. When I was at the Institute, I used to work with a lot of the Asians, maybe Tom and others, and they were bipartisan. You know, so I would work with Republicans and Democrats. I now only work with Democrats. There's not a Republican that I'm working with. So that's my choice. I started out working for Senator McGovern, so that makes sense to me.
Right.
I have a big poster over my desk that says, good man, good friend, great senator.
Right.
And, you know, that's my value. I really add value to that concept, and I won't work with somebody who doesn't represent that anymore. You know, he had his flaws too, but he was a good human. I think good humans is what we need right now. And, you know, the media doesn't have enough staff cover their backgrounds and get to know them. We've cut the media organizations down to such a skeletal crew that they're just busy reporting what's put out.
Well, and always the last to get crew and the last to get political reporters. Political reporter, just like, go, nobody wants to hear about that.
Well, you hear it all the time now. You're Trump. I mean, one of the hardest things was the Cap Radio, which I founded. And we had to make the decision of, do we run Trump live on the air? And I never thought I would say that about a president. We did is because we have PolitiFact that lives with us. And so do you make the choice of running counter narrative all the time while he's on? Or do you cover it like a news story? Well, I always assumed that the president demanded live preemption on the air. I no longer assume that. And so, you know, it's been awakening in a lot of ways. Now, whether it happens this election or the next one, I don't know. I hope it happens this election so that I live to see it.
He's painful to watch, actually.
He is pretty painful. We made the decision at Cap Radio to air him live on the web for those, because we have Republican supporters. And they can watch him if they want live, but we're going to treat him. And NPR made the same decision. We're going to treat his podcasts or his newscasts every day as stories that we cover. and do fact checks on them. It's not phony. I mean, he calls it phony news, you know, what he does to reporters in his press conferences is, I find, obnoxious.
Yes, so. Can't let you go. So. The number one question of everybody is, how much weight have you lost?
I started it when I was on the art board because all they did was feed you. And I started at 317 pounds 8 years ago. And now I weigh 186. So, you know, it's slow. It's 8 years. And I use an app on my phone called Lose It. It's free. And it's basically Weight Watchers. What you do is you write in what you eat at every meal. And they give you calories for it. And then you make sure you work it off, either in the garden, in the pool, or someplace, or you don't eat. And I like scotch too much. So I work off scotch and chocolate.
That's why we love you so much.
I know. So. Well, I was delighted. You know, I weigh every morning too, because I get a daily feedback. So when I hit that yesterday, I thought, God, I'm going to look on my calculator and see how much that is. And it was 130 calories. And I thought, this is worth posting. This is actually pretty cool.
So you lost 130?
I lost a person.
Pounds.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it really wasn't that onerous. You know, honestly, it isn't. Once you pay attention and write it down and, you know, devote your energy to it, which I have lots of. And I have a dog now that's going to be a service dog. She's a rescue. We have three rescues living in the house. So they're very, very fun to play with, and they keep your spirits up, and they run around outside. And, you know, I'm very lucky. I really am. And I know it, so.
That's the key.
Yes.
Knowing how lucky we are.
Yes, it is. And I look forward to talking to you during the election.
Barbara O'Connor, Political Woman. I'm Gloria Moraga. Please share, please comment, please subscribe.